Hello, this is a Tripe Supper looking ahead to the game against Swansea City this weekend. I'm Dom Sean, I'm joined by Phil Tallentire and Chris Garbutt on what is his last ever Tripe Supper appearance. Well, actually no, your last ever Tripe Supper appearance as a Gazette employee.
Yeah. He'll be coming back, don't worry.
Yeah, there'll be a couple of guest appearances throughout the season.
Special editions.
Yeah, after a heavy defeat when we can come and have a good moan.
We'll get to work at 8 o'clock in the morning. You'll be there with your nose up against the glass then.
I've taken the deal.
Are we going to let the listeners know about the little mishap?
Yeah, this is the second Tripe we recorded this week. But the first one disappeared.
It's gone into the ether.
Yeah, I inadvertently deleted it whilst watching the Mighty Red Car on Thursday night. Yeah.
If this one doesn't go very well, just to let you know that yesterday's was miles funnier, loads more witty, content was much better.
Did you leave your performance on the training ground?
We were rudely interrupted by your secretary though, halfway through.
Yeah, with a bunch of flowers.
Yeah.
Or at least that's what he told us.
Yeah.
Anyway, Swansea this weekend, and Tony Pulis is likely to make changes, or at least you would think so, because he's talked at his press conference on Friday morning about the size of his squad and the depth and the quality of his squad. Phil, you were over at Rockcliffe. Mm. Was there a suggestion that he, because the thing that struck me midweek was when he talked about the players that we'd left out, Dale Fry, Brittas Omolonga and Mo Besic, and how he hopes the raring to go on Saturday, which made you think, well, does that mean they're coming back in? But then the win on Wednesday, was there any suggestion as to how we'll go?
Well, I thought it was interesting, first of all, that the interview he gave with the club before kickoff on Wednesday night, where he talked about their numbers were down at Norwich, those three players, and obviously a couple of them being on international duty, hadn't they? Well, Dale had as well. And you kind of, you know, there was a feeling that maybe he should have managed that situation differently, and in future they'll look at that again. And so the next time there's an international break, players who have been away, it may decide not to throw them straight in. I think the issue, people have been looking for an angle around the Dale Fry thing, haven't they? You know, Dale missed out. He didn't have the greatest game against Norwich and was subbed in that match, but he's been excellent this season, generally speaking. Mm. You know, he's been one of the picks of the season for me. And, you know, every player's going to have an off day, and and he wasn't the only player who didn't, you know, play at 100% at Norwich. And I think Tony Pulis wanted to make it crystal clear that, you know, players will be left out of the team and we shouldn't get too excited about it and too, you know, agitated about it. You know, there's a variety of reasons why you might leave somebody out. That, you know, the obvious reason being that you change formation and you want a different kind of fullback or a wing back, or you want somebody who plays better in a two-man central defence. You know, he says, you know, you've got a squad, you've got players pushing to play. He also made it clear that the players who work hard and keep knocking on the door will be first in the queue, you know, first in the taxi rank the next time there's a vacancy. So I think it's all the kind of stuff that most managers say now, but I think he wanted to get that out there. It feels as though they know that every time somebody misses out, it's like, well, Tony Pulis is finished with him.
What have they done wrong?
Yeah, exactly. It's not, you know, and we know there's bigger issues around certain players, whether Britt's going to be there for the long run. Obviously, he's a player who didn't feature too much under Tony last season, certainly first off. And we know that Rudy Gusted's coming back. Gusted, should I say. And so there are little soap operas in certain positions, isn't there, that we're all aware of and we all keep one eye on. And I also am a firm believer that most managers, 95% of managers, when push comes to shove, will favour their own signings eventually. Mm. So if he spent money on Saville, he spent money on McNair, people like that, he's going to want to play them eventually. I think there is an issue, we might touch on that, you know, today, is the issue of some players I can see not playing a lot of football. You know, where does Danny Bath come in? You know, Sam McQueen, is he going to get in the team ahead of George? So loads of issues, but I think what he wanted to make crystal clear was the fact that, you know, just because somebody's left out of the team, it isn't the end of the world. They're not out of my plans. They just missed a football match.
I think another thing that to take into consideration, what people fail to do is, you know, everyone's just concentrated on the Borough team, but Tony Pulis will look and assess the opposition. Mm. And if he feels there's a certain member of the squad that will deal with or cope with, you know, an opposition threat or an opposition danger better, then he'll mix it up and change it. You know, Dale Fry, at Leeds away, the way that their midfield set up and sort of pressed so high that it was a perfect opportunity for Fry to play, because he can just nip past it and he breaks out into midfield, doesn't he, really well, and all of a sudden he's got a load of space. So he's taken that into account. I know before the Norwich game he did sort of mentioned quite heavily that Besic and Saville had been away and played two 90-minute games. So I was surprised to see them included from the start, actually. I was surprised to see Besic included from the start at Norwich.
Mm. I think you can tell already that he really thinks highly of Saville.
Yeah.
I know he said in his press conference on Friday, yeah, he said that he said, I thought it was okay, there was more to come. And I agree with that. I think Saville was okay the other night. I don't think he was... Vic had him down as man of the match, didn't he? But I thought he was... No, I get that because he scored the goal and he made a vital interception at the other end, but I think his all-round game was okay.
I think that comment was, there's a lot more to come
I think the caveat most fans come up with, and I have a great deal of sympathy with this viewpoint, is that when you see a player like, for example, Britt have a tough match at Norwich, and then you put in the fact that he got little or no support and he was quite often exposed, you know, and then he misses out the following week, people are going to rightly say, well, he might have played badly, but it was hardly his fault. You know, he didn't get any service and he came within a whisker of getting his foot on the end of one decent cross that did come in, and he arguably won a penalty that wasn't awarded. So there are sort of little issues around people being dropped as well. You know, like, again, going back to Dale, Burra kept five clean sheets, didn't they, with Dale in the team?
I think the thing is, though, if he's talking about not being fresh, you know, they're looking at the data and they're already you know, showing signs of fatigue.
Well, Besic did at Norwich, he looked tired.
If it kind of hits home, I think, as to just how brutal the Championship is, because I'm just picking a team out of thin air, but Rotherham probably have, and I'm saying this without any great knowledge of Rotherham's squad, I would imagine 16, 17, 18 players. So if kind of Pulis offers that insight to say, you know, certain players are already showing signs of fatigue. What's it going to be like for Championship players in February and March when they've played, you know, what, 20, 30-odd games?
Well,
I think for Borough to make full use of the squad now, to make sure they're fresh, to make sure they come back in and they've benefited from having a full week off, it can only benefit them later in the season.
You would hope that that's where the signings that we've made and the depth that we've acquired is going to come to into fruition. You know, once suspensions and injuries really start taking hold, and you know, we're going to have an array of fresh players ready to call them. It's going to be. I think that when players do miss out, and you know, we don't always get a reason for that. You know, I think fans sort of take that to heart, don't they? And they think like, oh, well, he doesn't like him. What, you know, or, what? Why isn't he playing? He's my favourite player. Why isn't he playing? I think you're going to see it a lot where players are just going to have to sit. You know, take two games out and won't play, and you're going to see, you know, Saville might play five in a row and then not play for
it's tough, that, isn't it? I mean, we heard when Monk was in charge last year, you know, the players didn't like him.
But that was different, wasn't it? Two things. First of all, Borough weren't consistently winning. And secondly, there was no rhyme or reason. The formation was changing by the match, and so were the selections. I think most Borough players, if you pushed them to say, why didn't you play, for example, against Bolton, I think most players would say it was for this reason.
Clarity about Pulis. He'll make it absolutely clear.
That's what I like about Pulis. Yeah. Everything's down. I mean, it's not just Burrow. Look at Tottenham, one of the teams pushing for the title and they're in the Champions League. They desperately need to rest Harry Kane, but can't.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes when you've got a situation where you've got a player who's markedly better than the rest around him, particularly, you can think of a one-man team, Gareth Bale in the Wales team would jump straight out as a player who just simply is irreplaceable. But I think, as you say, Dom, and I think you're saying the same thing as Elgarbs, Borough do have a lot of like-for-like replacements. You know, if Housen misses, and you've got Besic, and you've got Clayton, and you've got Saville, are Borough really that much weaker for that match? You know, can they still win with that group of players? You'd have to say, on most occasions, you'd fancy them.
Do Borough have any players, then, who you can't drop? Who you'd say,
Randolph?
You know, who you'd say, you know, no, you need them in. It'd be a big problem if they were to miss out.
Well, I think that the first name, one of the first names on the team sheet, I think he's openly come out and said it, is when Ayala has fit, he plays, doesn't he? You know, he mentioned that he was rare, he was dying to get back.
But I've missed him, have they?
No, but he still, as soon as he was fit, he went bang straight back in the team, didn't he?
Yeah.
I think Ayala will always play under Pulis.
He said
he's the best defender in the Championship, didn't he?
The name that springs to mind for me, just because I think he offers something completely different to anyone else in the squad, is Braithwaite.
Yeah.
I think that was a big, big mistake, and we don't get to hear the full story and exact reasons why players do and don't play, but I think from the outside looking in, I thought it was a big mistake not to play him at Norwich. They were there for the taking. I think probably, which comes to show, probably Tony Pulis might admit the same thing. Burrow needed that bit of craft. And I think he is. I think you are dead right, Dom. Of the players in the first five or six, seven games who creatively stood out, I think that the having that balance between Downing and Braithwaite's been critical, because it keeps... For no other reason than it gives teams two people to worry about. I think Burrow were far too easy to subdue at Norwich. The other player I think that jumps out for me is Darren Randolph. I think he's had... I mean, I haven't seen Lonergan, other than obviously... and he's an experienced keeper. But for me, Randolph has got to be head and shoulders.
Just quickly, the on the Lonergan one, it's an orthodox... he's the cup keeper.
Yeah, but doesn't turn the bench,
yeah. Ayala and Braithwaite are the only two players that... he's openly come out and said we need them in the team.
See, if we had this conversation in April, we'd all be saying the one player Burrow cannot afford to be without is Adama Traore.
Yeah,
we'd have all said that. We'd have all, you know. But sometimes I think we'd also all agree that sometimes it can be very limiting. I think we've said it in this forum recently that to have just one go-to player can almost cripple a team, because
George has been that for a few years, hasn't he?
You don't believe you can cope without him. And B, if he doesn't perform and he's in the team, the team doesn't win. So I think Burr are a more liberated group of players without Adama. So, but that's, I'm almost contradict myself, because I would have said in April the one player Burr can't afford to lose if they're to push on and win promotion would be Adama Traore. So for Burr to be second in the table without him, I think it says a lot actually.
The one thing that stands out for me as well is there was a couple of examples last season where, you know, George just didn't have any competition, did he? It was his spot. I think the spontaneous approach now, where you're going to see changes and rotations, there are little patches across the pitch where George now all of a sudden thinks, well, if I don't perform, I might lose my place, and if McQueen performs, I might not get back in. Clayton's openly said it in a post-match interview the last couple of weeks, where he said, we're actually petrified of getting substituted and someone coming on and changing a game, because if they do so, I'm not going to get back in the team. So that almost breeds a healthy competition and a fierce competition for dragging. You don't want players that are nailed on guaranteed positions, do you?
Because you've already got one of Burrow's most experienced players and the club captain, who can't get anywhere near the team at the moment, Grant Ledbetter. Yeah, Lewis Wing, who's been one of the picks of the team for me in the first five or six games, is now out of the picture. Probably a little harshly, if we're being honest. But, you know, Burrow winning games, so, you know, who are we to say? So that there are players, you know, McNair cost a lot of money. He hasn't started
in the league.
What does he have to do? Does he come in? I know we've talked about him in the past on the pod, but, where, you know, who does he come in
for? I probably think that he's Shotton's understudy at the minute.
Could be, because you've got a goal scoring midfielder in Saville. You've got your workhorses in a creative workhorse in Besic, a real team player in Housen. Housen's been great, and he can go forward as well when he needs to. And then you've got the player who's made the defensive midfield position his own.
Yeah,
Adam Clayton, who's been excellent this season as well. So I totally agree. I think one or two big names this season will barely feature from week to week, and it's going to be interesting to see how the manager manages that, because, you know, say for sake of argument it's Sam McQueen, he hasn't come from Southampton to sit on the Borough bench. Paddy McNair obviously will be desperate to play after, you know, thinking he's got a new start at Borough, but those players could well barely feature if touchwood Borough don't pick up too many injuries.
You know, like where you said though that, like, who's undroppable, who's nailed on, you're going to go through periods and patches of the season. I mean, at the minute, for me, like, you know, Clayton plays, doesn't he?
He's got three yellows already. Yeah,
I'd say the same for Housen.
Yeah, exactly. But you're going to go through patches where they might drop a little bit of form. And, you know, Tony Pulis has said, he said form will dictate who plays.
Well, maybe the reason those two players are pretty much undroppable at the moment is because, as you just said, they've got people breathing down their necks. And I think there was far too many players in that team over the past... not just last season, actually, for a couple of seasons, even at times under Aitor, that they knew.
Coasting.
I wouldn't accuse him of that, but there would be a danger that they could fall into that mindset, because they knew. They could have a bad game or two. It was the same in the goalkeeping position at times, where there's been nobody knocking on the door. And I don't think that's a healthy situation, you know, particularly in the modern era of football where every game is 100%. You know, there's no such thing as like, oh, we can turn up and play at 75% and get a result.
One thing I will say about the squad that Pulis has assembled, though, and I think it's credit to him, is the competition's there and the squad's big, but I don't see any sulkers. I don't see any.
Well, I was going to say that it's going to be a test of Pulis's man management skills, isn't it? To keep players happy.
Doesn't strike as the kind of bloke. I mean, he used the term. The players have him. He was speaking generally, but he used the term at the press conference about players having massive egos surrounding them, and there is a sense of that footballers are a little bit more fragile than they used to be. But then again, players in the 70s were in 13, 14 man squads. Yeah. So by and large, particularly if you were a first team player, you played. Mm. I think there is an element about managing that. The difference is, I think, with Tony Pulis, he's been there and done it. You know, is there anybody who can knock on his door and that will intimidate him or frighten him or worry him? Mm. You know, he's very much a, well, it's my way or the highway kind of guy.
His honesty will help. In this situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, he's openly said, hadn't he? I think it was post Bolton. That he said it's not an 11 game. He said we are together as a unit. There's 20, 23 of us, and we're all going to be needed through suspensions, injuries, and dips in form.
I think
the squad will get promoted if we get promoted, not an 11. So
I think where you lose players is we started leaking out, didn't it, in Monk's time, where players were being almost dropped to challenge how they would react to being dropped. Now footballers hate that. They absolutely hate anything that's like not clear and above board. Understand? We all would in life. Mm. You know. For a manager to be trying to be clever by
like saying, an ulterior motive.
I'm going to try and put, you should know within that squad who are the tries and who are the battlers and who are the shirkers, you know, within a few days of walking through the door. Even if you just talk to people around the club, will know, right, watch out for him. If he can get away with something, he will. He's brilliant, he'll give you 100% every week. You don't need to drop a player to get a reaction. That for me is just overthinking everything. And Pulis would never do that. I'm sure.
I don't, yeah.
You know. You mentioned Phil at the start. Rudy Gusted, who is well on his way back, played 65 minutes for the under-23s earlier this week against West Brom, I think it was. Preston next week looks on paper to be a good opportunity. You'd think to bring him in when he's up to speed. Where does he slot in terms of the pecking order up top, do you think? Because before he got injured, he was number one last year.
I think Hugel is now approaching, or if he's not approaching, he's already there at full tilt. Martin Braithwaite and Britt Sombalonga complete the 4-3. I don't see him playing much first team football this year, to be honest. Well,
despite the fact that he was, when Sombalonga was here last year.
We didn't have Jordan Hugel then, though, did we?
No, but they had a Sombalonga.
Mm.
And Gusted was still
who'd average a goal every game when he took over.
But the qualities that Gusted brought was something that we didn't have at the club at that time. Whereas we've now got Brit's qualities and we've got the qualities that Gusted brings in Jordan Hugel.
You said that you don't think you feature. Given that you know that Gusted does tick boxes
for the gaffer,
would you not even expect to see him on the bench?
Well, I thought it was telling.
Because I'd certainly expect that to be used.
I thought it was telling that in the pre-season friendlies, there was a couple of occasions where Gusted was the lead striker and Bamford was out wide.
What looked like the strong team.
Yeah,
at
the time when he was playing like a fourth, whatever it was, more or less a 4-5-1, wasn't it? I think managers do have their favourites, and it wasn't a coincidence that Gusted went straight into the team within a couple of weeks of the manager team. I get what you're saying about Jordan Hugel, and I think it's going to be intriguing to see who gets the nod.
Yeah.
I mean, what the problem with the league fixtures, as you say, Dom, is relentless. 46 games. There isn't one gimme game where you can try anything or rest players. You know, I guess it has to be the cups. But
I think the other thing with Gusted is in terms of what, and I get that Borough have since got Hugel, like you say, but we saw at Villa last year in that second leg, Gusted didn't even look half fit.
Shouldn't have been, but he was put on.
I think that is down to Tony Pulis craved a quality in a footballer up the top end of the pitch
that
nobody else could provide, so he had to do that over other players. Whereas now he's got John Hugel.
I tell you what,
it does everything that Gusted can do.
The Hugel versus Sombalonga one's an interesting one, isn't it? Because it's a straight battle, but they're very different.
You think Hugel and Sombalonga is a straight battle?
Well, in terms of, I mean, in terms of a battle for the spot
right.
up front,
right?
You know, it is, isn't it? They're the two clear. They're the two. I'm not saying it's a straight battle in terms of it's 50-50. I'm saying it's a straight battle in that they're both strikers who are battling for that position up top.
But they're very
different players, aren't they?
The system that we've been playing with, the three central defenders, the wing backs, the three in midfield, and then the two at the top. For me personally, I view it as it's Hugel's and then Braithwaite or Brits?
Honestly, I view it as
Braithwaite guaranteed
behind
whoever.
Hugo or Sambalonga.
Hugo probably right. Then Brit.
I think the critical thing for me
Brit will score your goals, won't he?
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Looking at it sort of a slightly longer term view, I'm always a little bit wary about players who haven't had a proper pre-season, how they last the course. And Jordan Hugo hasn't had a decent pre-season. He got that injury, didn't he?
Yeah.
Rudy Gusted's had no pre-season to speak of. I know he got injured back end of July, but that's, I mean, I could imagine having a good 2 months out to probably set him right back.
Matt Braithwaite's playing World Cup football.
Yeah, Braithwaite. So there are longer term issues around that, but I genuinely sat here now wouldn't like to say whether Justed is still top of Tony Pulis's pecking order. I mean, Hugo is a loan signing, although we expect it to be possibly made permanent.
And he is talking up Hugo at every given opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, he was quite downbeat about him initially, wasn't he, when the signing was first made, but he has been very complimentary more recently. I think I do feel sorry for Britt, because there's this snobby around strikers who only score goals, and he's more to Britt than that. He doesn't just poach.
He works hard.
Because
he's still here.
Yeah, he's still here. You know, and I know he costs a lot of money and beyond good money as well, but you know, his ratio's there for all to see. And you know,
did you see that stat that went out since the beginning of 2016? Nobody scored more championship goals than Britt.
I know it's a cliche, but goals win matches.
But, you
know,
taught on strikers. The one striker I think scored the most championship goals in this calendar year, Ollie McBurney, will be playing up front for Swansea. When I look at him, I see a centre forward who would be ready made.
Totally the purest player.
I mean,
I've liked Hugo. I've loved watching Hugo so far.
He brings something to the team that I think he does everything. He's Rudy Gusted, but better, basically. So he brings everything to the team. He's a focal point. He brings other players into the game.
He leaves everything on the pitch.
He works hard.
He's horrible
to
play against.
He's the focal point of Boris attack for me. And then I personally see it being as, you know, Britt or Braithwaite to play off him alongside him. You know, if you're going to play the system that we play, can you play Braithwaite and Britt?
I'll tell you what, it's a really great problem to have.
It is. Yeah. You look, all around the Championship.
Most managers would absolutely give their left arm to have that.
There isn't a club in the Championship with three better strikers than Britt, Hugel and Braithwaite.
And then you've got Gusted, who was wanted by several Championship clubs. Ashley Fletcher was a £6 million striker last year.
I know.
He's not even part of the conversation.
I know. We haven't even mentioned him.
The thing that struck me about Hugel...
I can't believe he didn't go out.
I know, you're talking about Hugo Lehr. The thing that struck me about him the other night was, and we knew that this is what he offers, but he was up against Mark Beavis and David Weed, who were both
units,
big units, right, big strong, both played
well as well, didn't they?
He's so good at getting himself between the ball and the man. And when you've got Braithwaite and Downing and the wing backs and Housen and Saville and Besic all running,
willing to run beyond him,
he can bring so many runners into the game.
Whether you remember, there was like a it was when McQueen came on. McQueen sort of played the ball into him, and he controlled it on his chest. He brought it down. It was on the edge of the box, and we had Wheat right on his back, and he held it off. The ball was just stood stationary on the floor, and he held it off. Wheat was trying. He held it off, and McQueen continued his run and just took the ball and went past him. And I thought that is perfect hold-up play. That.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing when you look at Borough and you realise how they must appear to the opposition and to opposition managers and fans and coaches and scouts and all that. You look and you just think, I subdue him, he's a danger. I keep him quiet, he's a danger. If you know, they can score goals from midfield, they can score goals from set pieces.
Said that to me.
You know, they've got pretty much every box ticked, apart from possibly the argument that they haven't got sort of orthodox wide players who bomb on and whip crosses in, but they've got players who can do that job, maybe it's not as effectively as a genuine winger. But you know, they're finding a way, and you know they've got momentum, and they've got, you know, Daniel Fark mentioned it again, didn't he? The 2 metre players, you know, like
the
basketballers.
I love that line.
I think everything about Borough smacks of having a plan and knowing how to execute it, and it isn't going to work every week. It didn't work very well at Norwich. But there's no team going to go through the entire championship season and not lose a game.
Yeah.
It just smacks to me that Pulis has got most of his ducks in a row. And, you know, they must frighten the life out of the opposition.
Well, Potter said yesterday, he said, Middlesbrough are strong. They're strong from set pieces. the big players, you know, the everything that you would imagine from a Tony. But he said, I am not labelling them as a team that only does that. He said, because they've got a squad full of good footballers and they know how to play.
Well, we touched on that, didn't we, in the pod that disappeared? This whole kind of winning ugly thing, which I think is unfair for Borough so far, because we talked about it, didn't we? That, you know, I thought they were excellent against a very good West Brom team, played them off the park in the first half, didn't
destroyed they? Sheffield United,
blew Sheffield United away, were very good at Bristol in the first half.
All over Birmingham.
These are teams who are all in the top six, by the way.
I think Borough have been good to watch this year. The other night was a bit scrappy, you know, it was laboured at times, wasn't it? But Bolton stuck 10 men behind the ball and came up frustrated.
It's going to happen a lot, that.
Pulis said that in his interview beforehand, didn't he? He said, we're going to have to get used to teams coming to nullify us. That's the biggest compliment you can get, isn't it? When teams are setting up to shut you up.
Absolutely.
I kind of feel with those games now, I can almost write the script. You know, when a team comes to Borough that's maybe down the other end of the table and probably don't fancy themselves to win, you can kind of plot the game, because it went like that a lot under Karanka's time, where Borough would labour a bit to get the first goal, because as you said, they were up against the opposition had a game plan to frustrate and to subdue, and it was just a case of waiting for the second goal then, and if the sooner the second goal comes, the quicker that you can breathe a sigh of relief. A lot of times it took a long time to get that second goal, and everyone's sort of a bit nervous and a bit worried, but it's not because Borough aren't trying to score, it's just they're probably coming up against that glass ceiling every time and trying to break through it.
The exciting games, like your West Broms, which I thought was an enthralling encounter between two teams who were having a go at each other, them games are great to watch, but the games, like you mentioned there, where teams are going to come and sit men behind the ball and have two strong banks, even if you do get your nose in front, they're then going to have to open up and come at you a little bit. Yeah. It is vital that you get number two and number three, isn't it? Because then you just go, well, it's game over.
Yeah.
The longer that goes on at 1-0 and teams start to go, we're going to have to push on a bit here. Naturally, you go, right, well, we're only winning 1-0 here. We can't get a second goal. You start dropping back.
I think the other thing with teams when they come up against Borough is they know that they're not going to get many chances. Fark talked about this a lot, didn't he? We have to be clinical because we're not going to get many opportunities. Yeah. So what we need to take them. So if chances come, Bolton had a couple, didn't he, to start the second half. Mm. If you miss them, you're the opposition team and you're thinking, you know, are we going to get another chance?
Yeah. Because
Borough don't give many opportunities.
Borough concede two or three chances a game, don't they? So, you know, you're looking to beat Borough, you've got to be really, really clinical on your finishing and your chance taking.
I mean, I think the only thing that you'd pick out of the night's match was actually the two goals that came were both from their mistakes, really.
Yeah.
But, I mean, a good execution, don't get me wrong, particularly
Brits. And before that first goal, although Borough were playing very well, you did wonder where the goal was.
It was a little bit of a flat, dare I say, a little bit of an uninspired performance. But you're going to get those. It's the Championship. Through a 46-game season, you might get 15 games like that. And providing you win most of them, it doesn't really matter.
I'd take one flat performance tonight all day long. But that's the only game that I've sort of looked at and thought Borough weren't at the... You know, obviously, apart from Norwich, but all the other games, I think Borough have created chances freely.
Have Millwall.
Well, the good news is we haven't been disrupted with some roses.
Not today.
By the secretary knocking on the door with the nose peeing up against the glass. Before we wrap up, predictions, Saturday, home win, win to nil.
I'm really looking forward to tomorrow's game, actually. I think it's going to be intriguing. You know, Swansea are trying to find that identity again out there, of that, you know, possession football, chances created. So I don't think they're quite there yet. We've seen them struggle a little bit in a few games this season, but it's going to be interesting to see how they come and approach tomorrow's game. Are they going to come and have a pop at us, or will it be another bodies behind the ball? So I think Borough will win. I think Borough, I'm going to say 2-0. Another 2-0.
I said before, this two-game sequence of home matches, that I think Borough need to take 6 points if they're serious about being automatic contenders. And a couple of people said, well, that's a bit greedy. But I think I do think you have to be a unit at home. They laboured a bit against Bolton, but were well worth a win. And I think against Swansea now, they need to put in a performance and show, right, okay, like they did against West Brom, and they snuck it in the end, fair enough, but it was a good performance. I think Borough can win, beat Swansea. Now, I've no reason to suspect they won't. I don't think it'll be comfortable, but I don't see why they can't win, 1-0 or 2-1, something like that.
We've been we've been fantastic at home, haven't we? Really, there's no doubt in that. The no goals conceded, 100% record. I fully expect that to continue, Morrison.
Looking forward to Flint v McBurney. The tallest.
Just missing the gloves. Lovely stuff. Well, we'd love to bring in Take That's Great to Stay for a montage BBC style, which would have been extra apt if we'd have done that today.
Totally.
Will you be going, Gab? Take That at the Riverside. Gary Barlow in the box.
Well, unless my missus puts her hand up and wants some tickets, I'll have to try then. But
no, not be my cup. Not I think, mate.
Hey, you had the chance to interview Howard this afternoon.
Turned down the chance to interview Howard.
I walked past his desk this morning, and it was on Ticketmaster already. Pre-registering.
Howard, it's Phil from the Gazette. Why do you think Paddy McNair's going to get in this?
Are you going, Mike?
I've seen him before, actually.
I won
tickets to see him at the Stadium of Light. And me and one of my mates went, this was years ago, and we sat there and the Pet Shop Boys were supporting. That was the best thing about it.
I'd be more interested in going to see him on Rick Astley.
Rick Astley, never going to give you up.
I tell you what, it was a great show when they played at the Stadium of Light.
Yeah.
First time I've ever been able to say that about some show at the Stadium of Light.
you know for a fact that on the run up to that, it's going to be like, people are going to be like tweeting them on social media, like, are you going to try a part?
We'll have them on the front.
Gary Barlow in Central Park.
Martin Braithwaite on the table behind him, hopefully. Anyway, thanks, Gabs. Best of luck, and we'll see you here for the promotion party in
May
time, and then obviously for Take That the Riverside.
Yes.
Cheers, fellas. Thank you.
Cheers, Phil.